Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Today, I'm Clark Nicholson, Program Manager with the Remote Desktop team, and with my colleague Christian Montoya, we'll be covering Remote Desktop Services in Azure and partner-hosted clouds. Doesn't look like we're moving here, though. There we go. So before we get started, I'd like to just get a show of hands. How many of you are familiar with Remote Desktop Services? Maybe you've deployed it before, managed a deployment. Oh, excellent. Looks like about 80-90% of the room. And how about Azure? Maybe you've deployed some VMs and a VNet. Well, excellent. Yeah? I'd say about 60-70%. So that's great. That'll help me tailor the talk, and I'll frankly, given the experience level it seems like in the room, I'm going to skip through some of the intro on RDS, and we can spend more time kind of drilling in on the meat of the subject. So for those who didn't raise their hand, Remote Desktop Services is a way of deploying virtual desktops and applications from Windows to any device, anywhere. And we support, on-prem deployments, we support hybrid deployments and pure cloud deployments. And primarily, we look at ourselves as a platform. So RDS is a platform that many partners build on top of. Many of you are probably familiar with Citrix, probably one of our bigger partners. We have many other partners who also build on top of the RDS platform, providing different functionality and capabilities. And so we want to keep moving forward in that model where we are a platform that everyone can innovate on top of. Of course, in the past, we had our on-prem deployments. We support session hosts where you have multiple users logging into what we used to be called terminal server. Now we call it Remote Desktop Session Host. And then we also have VDI solutions where users can log in to a single VM associated with them, typically a Windows client operating system in that case. And now, of course, in the modern world, we're moving all of that up into the cloud, right? And so we have both our session host solutions and also VDI solutions. Today, in this session, we're going to focus in on our session-based solutions in Azure. We had another session earlier in the week with Citrix talking about the new licensing for Windows 10, where you can do VDI. I suggest you go back and take a look at that video if you missed the session. But today, we're going to be talking about the multi-user and session host-based deployments in Azure, okay? So those of you, again, who didn't raise your hand, there's sort of five basic components to the RDS solution. We have our session host, as I mentioned. That's where the users are actually logging in. That's where they're running their applications and desktops. This component is also used in a Citrix Zen app environment, for example. We have our connection broker that will distribute connections across a farm of session host servers so that you can scale up and scale down your deployments. We have our RD web access, where users can log in, see what resources the administrators published for them, and then connect to either the apps or the desktops. We have our gateway that allows secure connections to come in from the public internet and then get de-encrypted and sent on to the RDS deployment. And finally, we have our RD license server that helps our customers keep track of their usage and make sure that they're true on their licensing. Now, we also have a set of remote desktop client applications. We support Windows, the various Windows platforms, iOS, Mac, and Android. And then if you think about RDS, one of the things that I've been noticing on the show floor this year is a lot of people are looking at it as a secure way of providing their company's applications and data because fundamentally the data never leaves the data center if you've configured your RDP connections properly. And so it's a way to really make sure that if your users are accessing their data and applications from an iPad and they leave it laying in a train somewhere, no problem. Other than the loss of the iPad, you haven't lost any of your data. All right, some concepts that I want to make sure that we all are on the same page before we go into this further, because I'll use these terms. First of all, we have the concept of a collection, which is essentially a set of desktop session host servers that provide a certain set of applications or a certain desktop in a configuration, and those collections are assigned to users. We have our pooled RD session host collections. So that's where when users are logging in, our connection broker is going to assign them to the next available session host, right? So every time they log in, they might end up on a different session host, right? But we also, in 2016, have a new functionality that we call our personal desktop collections. And so in this model, you build a collection just like you always did with your session host servers, but you're able to assign users to specific session hosts. So they're always going to log into the same VM. Now you can give them admin access. You can let them restart their own VMs and install apps and so forth, right? But it uses the same RD session host deployment model as the multi-user collection model. Now we have a built-in user profile management system that we call user profile disks. And that applies to pooled, not to personal, because in personal, you're just going to use local profiles. But if you're in the pooled model, you need some way for the user's data and settings and things to follow them around to whatever session host they've been directed to by the broker. What we do is we store all that in a virtual hard disk, and we mount it on the session host that the user's been assigned to right before they log in. So when they log in, all of their data is present. And then if they make any changes and save things, it's available next time, independent of what session host they log into. Key point here is that the UPDs, we call them for short, are saved on a file share that's available over the network. It has to be visible from the session host, and it has to be in the same domain as the session host, and that's going to be important later in the talk. And then, of course, we have the concept of a high availability RDS deployment. And this is where you have multiple instances of each role service implemented in farms so that if one of them goes down, the service keeps running, right? All right, now we're going to move on to some Azure concepts that we're going to use throughout the rest of the talk here. One of them is a resource group. So this is in the new Azure resource management model. This is a group of resources that we want to manage and deploy as a group. So this might be your whole RDS deployment, for example. So all your VMs, your VNet, your NICs and storage accounts and so forth. A virtual network, we got to have a way for our VMs to talk to each other once we start deploying them. We'll do that on a virtual network up in Azure. We have our own private networking space up there. An availability set, this concept allows us to deploy, as I mentioned earlier, an HARDS deployment. So we're going to end up with two or more VMs that for each of our roles. And we want to make sure that Azure knows that they can't shut down all of those VMs at the same time, right? Because they have servicing events and things where they may have to restart one of our VMs. So the way we do that is with availability sets. We put all those VMs into the same availability set, and that effectively tells Azure, don't restart more than one of these VMs at a time, all right? Azure has an internal load balancer that's built into the service, and it can be either internal or external. So it's just a way of distributing connections across a set of VMs. If it's an external load balancer, it means that we've assigned a public IP address and a DNS name to the input to that load balancer. And I just mentioned public IP address. This obviously is the way that you access your deployments in Azure from outside on the public internet. And finally, the concept of source IP affinity. In older versions of our protocol, RDP, when we connected to the gateway, we had to have two connections from the client, and they had to go to the same gateway server. So if you put two gateway servers up in a farm, you have to set IP affinity on the load balancer so that you make sure that both of those connections go to the same gateway. Now that's really, at this point, is a backwards compatibility setting, because if you're running Win 10 and a 2016 gateway, we actually use WebSockets as our transport, so there's only a single connection. So you wouldn't actually need this, but if anybody tries to connect from a Win 8 box, for example, they would run into this issue. And so we recommend just going ahead and setting the source IP affinity on the load balancer. Okay, so that's the intro. Hopefully that gets kind of everybody up to the same page. Those folks who didn't raise their hands either knowing remote desktop services or Azure. So now we're going to drill into some of the improvements we've made in Windows Server 2016, but also in Azure. It's important to realize that work has been going on both sides here, right? We've been working for several years, actually, with the Azure team as the remote desktop team. We've been working with various teams to make sure that Azure is a fantastic environment to run your remote desktop services deployments. So the first thing we focused on was reducing cost and complexity. Back in 2012, that was a lot of the feedback we were starting to get from customers who were trying to do this, right when we first enabled this back in, I think it was 2014, is when we first enabled the licensing to, and Azure started supporting remote desktop services. So the first thing we looked at was our connection broker. Previously in 2012 R2, our connection broker, you had to basically stand up a SQL Server cluster for your broker. And that was quite expensive and complicated, as you might imagine. So new in Windows Server 2016, our broker will now support SQL authentication. And with SQL auth, we can actually use either Azure SQL Database, the PaaS service up in Azure, which is like super simple to set up and is very inexpensive. Or if you're on-prem, if you're in a partner-hosted cloud, you can set up a shared SQL Server cluster and just assign a database out of that cluster to the connection broker farm. Again, reducing the cost, reducing the complexity. So visually, the way this, just to sink this home, right, in 2012 R2, to have an HARDS deployment, you would have had to have had SQL Server clusters in an always-on availability set and two VMs an always-on availability group is what SQL calls it, and then in Azure, it would have to be in an availability set, right? So that if one of those SQL Server VMs got restarted, again, due to a servicing event or something in Azure's fabric, you'd still have access to the database. The broker would still know where to send connections and so forth. Now, with 2016 and Azure, you can turn on an Azure SQL DB, which is pretty trivial to do, and Christian's going to do a demo of that a little later. But now you can just turn on that Azure SQL database and enable your broker to run in a HA configuration. Now, the modeling that we've done, cost modeling, this is huge, especially when you have small deployments. This can be a 2 or 3x cost reduction in your RDS deployments in Azure. Really big deal. Okay, another team we've worked with is Azure Active Directory. And we've been working for several years on this concept of domain services. It's kind of like DC as a service, right? In fact, that's what we called it originally when we were talking amongst ourselves. This is a new feature in Azure. It's in preview right now. Basically, every RDS deployment needs a domain controller, right? It has to be in a traditional Windows Server Active Directory domain. And you would have had to stand up VMs to do that. Now, as a PaaS service, you can have that implemented for you. Of course, that reduces your complexity, but one of the nice side effects of this is now you get to an automatic sync from Azure Active Directory down to your AADS instance. So So all the users, so you can manage your users now up in AAD, and they're automatically synced down to your domain controller for RDS to use then, right? So again, visualizing this, before AADDS, you would have to stand up two VMs for your primary and backup domain controllers. They would have been an availability set, and the admin would have been managing the user accounts through AD directly. Now, with AADDS, we've eliminated those two VMs, and the admin can now manage the user accounts through AAD. So visualizing here, I'm illustrating an entire deployment then. This is what a deployment of 2012 R2 looks like in Azure. And I've got basically 8 VMs now running my infrastructure. So I'm not including the session hosts here. This is all the stuff around the session hosts, right? I had to have 8 VMs and 6 role services, right, for an HA deployment. So I had 2 for my RDWeb and gateway. So I've combined those 2 roles. This is our recommendations if you read our guidance. We've combined broker and license server, so I need 2 of those VMs for HA. And then I had to have the 2 AD VMs, and I had to have the 2 SQL VMs, right? So now, in 2016, we've cut that same recommended deployment size down to 4 VMs and 4 role services. So we've essentially cut the complexity and cost, really, of your RD infrastructure by about half. So this is a big, big deal. Now, the way you would configure this is with your external load balancer in front of your RDWeb and gateway farm, you're going to want to set up that source IP affinity if you want to support the older clients, right? In particular, the 8.0 and 8.1 clients. And then, of course, you're going to have availability sets for each of these role services. So you'll have 3, one for the RDWeb gateway VM set, one for the RD connection broker and license server set, and then one for your RDSH collection. If there's 2 or more VMs in that collection, then you're going to make it highly available, that's what you're going to want. And you want to put them in availability set again so that you're telling Azure not to shut down more than one of them at a time. Now, we'll see a little later that in these types of deployments in Azure, it's really important to keep your costs under control, that you shut down and deallocate your VMs when they're not being used. So a lot of people, when they first look at the cost models, they'll sit down with a spreadsheet and calculate what it's going to cost them to deploy RDS and IaaS, and they'll contact us and say, oh my gosh, this is really expensive, I can do this cheaper on-prem. And I say, are you leaving everything running 24/7? The answer is usually yes. And as soon as you start scaling things down, what you quickly realize is it's actually cheaper than on-prem. And we've done modeling of this with hardware partners where we've actually gone to them and said, okay, what would the recommended hardware configuration be for, you know, 400 users and this type of thing, right? And we get the costing of that and we amortize it over 3 years and it's actually cheaper to run the whole thing in Azure as long as you're doing this. That's the key. So this, I look at this as an opportunity for everybody to save money, basically, right? The other thing we're doing is something good for the planet. All of those servers are sitting in the back room just running all weekend long and at night, right? Because people bought the hardware, you know, energy's cheap. In Azure, we're actually shutting things down and we're taking load off of those servers, right? That means other people can come in and use them, or Azure can lower their power consumption. So in order to shut things down, what we've provided is a tool that we call our RDSH auto-scaling script that basically just runs on our broker, and it scales our RDSH servers in a given collection up and down based on usage and hours. And this is really meant to just be a starting point for everybody. We have a complete, you know, finished solution. You can install it, run it, and it will work. But we fully intended everyone to take it and, you know, customize it and do what they would want to do with it for their environment. So it's out on Script Center. Today, it is still running only on the ASM model, the previous Azure model, but we're in the process of porting it and testing it on ARM, and we should have a version out very soon for that. And then lastly, you're going to want to manage this deployment. So we have a service we call RDMS, Remote Desktop Management Service, that runs on our broker. That's what provides the PowerShell layer. And we also have a GUI that's part of Server Manager. And so you want to have access to that RDMS. So there's a couple ways you could do this. You can open up a public IP address to the broker machine while you're managing. You want to probably shut that back down when you're not, but this gives you a way to connect in, do some management, and get back out again. Another possibility is you can spin up a VM on this VNet that's just for management. So you have a public IP for that VM. You're connecting into it and then connecting remotely to the broker's RDMS service, right? So there's a bunch of different possibilities here, right? All right, now we've documented all of this up in TechNet. We have, starting at the reference architecture layer, we'll kind of lay out the basic block diagrams and have kind of the high level descriptions of what we recommend. And then eventually we get all the way down to step-by-step deployments of these types of solutions in Azure, right? And then also we're in the process of building our quick start templates or ARM templates. So these are tools to automate the deployment and management of your resources up in Azure. So right now the way we're approaching this is we're trying to build out sort of building blocks that people can use and mix and match. Again, they're open source, so people can get at them, they can modify them, customize them. We know lots of partners are doing that. But we're trying to provide a complete set. Today we have three flavors of what we call our basic deployment. That's a non-HA deployment, right? So we have one that is what I call the kick the tires deployment. This is where you don't need any prereqs. You just run this thing and it'll build the whole thing up in Azure. It'll spin up domain controllers and everything you need, right? Then there's another one where you build a deployment but assuming you've already got an existing Active Directory, right? And that Active Directory could be coming from various places, right? It could be a VPN connection, like a hybrid scenario. It could be Azure Active Directory domain services that we talked about earlier, and so forth. But we're now going to build a deployment using that domain controller, that Active Directory domain, and the VNet that it lives on. And then we have another basic deployment template that will use an existing AD, and it'll also use a custom image for your session host servers, and then you can build out your collection. So you can have your applications already pre-installed on there and build those out. And then we have the first of our HA templates that will start with a basic deployment and layer on top of that an HA gateway configuration. So it'll spin up a second VM with your gateway, put it in the same availability set and so forth, right? And configure everything like the load balancer, IP affinity, and for you. Okay? And then coming soon, under development right now, and probably will be publishing hopefully in the next few weeks, we have another template that will layer an HACB configuration on top of a basic deployment. We'll have one that you can use to update your collection. So once your collection's out there and running, and then you need to put out a new version with patches in your applications or operating system, you'll just point at the deployment, point at your new image, and it'll take care of replacing all the session hosts for you and without bringing the thing down. And then finally, we're going to have a template that does certificate updates. It'll use the Key Vault in Azure. Okay? So with that, I am going to bring up Christian, and he is going to walk us through some work he's done in Azure especially with the HA broker. All right.
All right. Thanks, Luke. All right, let's get this up and running. All right, so first off, Again, since some of you aren't quite might not be quite familiar with Azure, here's that new portal. I like my dark theme. It looks really nice to me. So here's the landing page. On your left-hand side, you have all your little shortcuts. I decided to have some resources, virtual machines, subscriptions, whatnot, and then you can just pin whatever you want to the start, and there you go. So let's just take a look at my first environment. As Clark mentioned, you can run all these different templates, and we have the different ones to just leave off at the same spot, one that just has the basic deployment. And that's what I have here. So what you'll see is you'll have the availability sets. So as you expand, as you run future templates with the HA gateway and web connection broker, they'll just build onto those availability sets, and then you just keep scaling out and scaling in. And that's especially important for the RD session host. So you'll notice I have one of those for here. But if I'm going to create a new collection, say one that's specifically for remote apps, maybe one that's specifically for a specific set of users, I would want to have a specific collection for those. And I'd also want to, again, have another availability set because we want to make sure that those never go out of service. Let's use Azure in the SLA. You have your different VMs. You'll notice that here I have a couple. I have my first RDSH host. I actually have two of them. The only difference here is I actually have a second connection broker because that's what we're going to go through. We're going to go through the entire setup of what it looks like to have that high availability for connection broker. And then after that, you'll see a load balancer. That's how you're going to connect externally, different NICs, public IP addresses. You'll see I kind of cheated and have my SQL database already, but we'll walk through that. So setting up high availability for a connection broker. You need that machine, the connection broker machine, plus that database. So you'll see here I have the connection broker. And for both these resources that we create, again, if you're sticking with the Azure defaults, all you have to do is from your resource group, go to add, and search for what you're looking for. And in terms of SQL database, just type SQL. And it'll be the second search that comes up. So here you go. It's actually really simple. Again, it has a brief description. Everything you search for is going to have that description so you know what you're doing in terms of all these different gallery images and offerings for you. So this looks easy enough. Enter a database name. Choose the resource group, and that's already the one that you launched it from, so nothing to change. You want to leave it for a blank database, so we're going to start from scratch. The server, each database needs to be hosted somewhere. In this case, I already have that. If not, just create a new one. And here you'll have just other information that you'll need to enter. So I can put a random name in there. Add your SQL admin login, so credentials. This is important to remember because later on we're going to connect using the SQL auth. So whatever you enter here, just remember that. Choose a location, and then leave these other configurations as they are. You definitely want to be able to contact them on your Azure network, and you want to have the V12 server, and that will make sure that we can connect from our connection broker. And after you select all that, just go back to this first tab and create. So again, I'm going to kind of cheat here. Yep. So I have my first database. Yeah, no, I don't need to answer that. And again, it's the exact same thing for your virtual machine. If you want to choose from the gallery image, then you can choose whether it's Server 2012 R2. Currently, it's not quite on the Azure portal yet, the Server 2016 TP5. And in a couple of weeks, when we go gung-ho, get the volume licensing for 2016, that'll be there too. So now that we have both of those, what do we need to do? Well, let's go first. Let's actually go to the second connection broker. It's already domain joined, but what else do you need to do to your connection brokers to actually connect? You actually need to install the ODBC driver that's going to be on each of the connection brokers so they can talk to, update, and pull stuff from SQL. So you'll see here, actually, if I go back to my SQL database, if I'm going to be using that connection, I'm going to use that driver. Let's see which driver I actually need. You'll see here in my connection string that it's ODBC driver 13 for SQL Server. OK, cool. So if I go to my connection broker, I can basically go online and search for actually just ODBC 13. And let's see if it works. Here we go. And all I have to do is a Microsoft download. And all you have to do is pull that down. And mine already downloaded it. and it's a quick, simple install. Never read, just accept, and install. There you go. Yes, I'm definitely an admin. Let's do it. So that's simple. And you do this on both and any connection brokers you're going to have. Again, we need to connect to the SQL database so we can keep updating those. Oh, that's a fancy UI. So do that on both. Check. What's the next thing you need to do? Well, I'm going to go back to my connection broker. But actually, from my connection broker, I'll go to my domain controller. Because you need to set up some sort of round robin, some way of communicating, being able to communicate from the outside world and actually reach your connection brokers. So that way, when you connect through the RD web and from the RD gateway, and you're asking to be hand-delivered to whatever collection, whatever session host, we know, okay, I'll distribute from this one IP address, whether it's a load balancer, whether it's DNS round robin, maybe connection broker one, or actually let's go to connection broker two. So in this case, we have the different machines here in our domain controller. And so what we're going to do is just create a host name that will actually point to both. So as you see here, I already have my HACB, .contoso.com. And you'll see that the first one is already set for my first broker. For some reason, my second broker is in here. But we're still going to add the host name for our second one. So same host name. 10.0.0. This one's 9. Okay. Sweet. That's step two. Make sure that you can actually be able to connect your connection brokers when you're trying to launch your connections. Now, the very last thing you need to do is actually set up the high availability for your deployment. So, like Clark mentioned, on that connection broker, I'm on my first connection broker, that's where you have all these management operations. So I go to my overview, I have everything set up, everything is already set up from my basic deployment. Set up high availability, I just right click on the connection broker. It gives you all this info, and we've definitely worked hard to make sure that you know what you're doing as you're setting everything up. So earlier, before 2016, you'd only see this dedicated database server, and now you see this shared one where we're going to use that SQL auth. So you make sure to click it. Now, I'm going to enter that same DNS name that all traffic will go to between the connection brokers. But now I need to actually grab that connection string that you see here. So I'm going to go back to my SQL database, copy this guy. We're going to paste it. In this case, the only thing you have to change is you actually need to enter your password because they're, as you're secure, they're not going to put your password up in plain text. So let's edit that here. I believe it's 2 exclamation points. We'll see. All right, so it does a pre-validation. And then all we need to do is actually click configure. So again, now it's going to do, what it's doing right now is actually moving that database from your internal connection broker. Without high availability, it just stores everything internally. But now, high availability, if this one goes down, we still need to be able to access all our collections, all our users, all that state information. So that's going up to SQL. On a good connection, this can take about 10 seconds. So I don't know if anyone was counting. But if we just stare at it long enough, it'll work, right? Ta-da! There it is. Yeah. So that's how simple it is to do it now. You don't have to deploy a full SQL Server cluster. You don't have to, you're not even deploy. You don't even have to maintain it. We'll let Azure do all that stuff for us. So after that, you set it up. And then everything else, sure, you want to update the certificate and make sure you have your single sign-on. But after that, all you need to do, actually, let's continue. You finally actually moved everything to SQL, and that's always the hardest part. So really, I just need to add my second connection broker server. So my broker two. So this one, again, is now we're just going to install that second connection broker. So if you ran the basic deployment, you didn't have to kind of walk through these steps of installing everything. But OK, fine. So right now, the DNS is a little bit off. But basically, you're just installing the roles. And all you have to do is, now that you go back out to your main machine, go to the RD Web Access, go to the Start panel, wherever you connect to your feed. Again, it could be iOS, Android, Mac, Windows. Start here, sign with our user, and you'll see all these apps. And personally, I like VS Code. If anyone hasn't checked them out, they're awesome. So it's going to start, and eventually, I wonder if the SQL Server 10 seconds is faster than launching a remote app. So you'll see here, in a couple seconds, your remote app will launch, and there you have it. You went from a simple connection broker, non-HA, to an actual high availability environment. You can keep layering on top of that with the other web gateway high availability, and then be able to connect and make sure for your customers that they are able to connect no matter what time, no matter what day, even if Azure decides to shut down random VMs. Actually, and we might have to call it quits. This guy's a little slow right now. But there you have it, guys. It's that simple. And anything else, templates, documentation, it's all out there for you.
Thank you, Christian. Okay, now I'm going to take you through another just quick demo that we've got set up here, if I can get my machine to wake up. So what I've done is set up, looks like I'm on the wrong box here. There we go. So what I've done here is I've set up Azure Active Directory domain services. And then I've run the template that uses a pre-existing AD. Right? So one of the things about domain services that you need to understand is that the preview right now only runs on a classic VNet. But our templates are all going to deploy on an ARM VNet. And so the first thing we've got to do is figure out how to connect the two. Well, lo and behold, there was this beautiful new feature called peering that came out about 2 months ago, if you saw the Azure information about that. And so I've utilized that feature. So what I've done here is I've got one VNet that I created that's a classic VNet. That's this one I'm highlighting here, C15X VNet. And then at the bottom, you'll see another one called two, and that's the ARM. And then what I've done here is I've gone in, I set those two up before I, at the very first of this deployment, I set those two up and I used this peerings. And it's as simple as saying add a peering, and I typed in the name of the classic VNet and off we went. That's all I had to do. Then I go over to the classic portal and I created a tenant called Contoso 15X. And I go into the Configure tab. Okay, and then I scroll down to Domain Services. And I enabled this, accepted the default domain name, and I entered in the VNet, the classic VNet that I wanted these domain services instances to be deployed on, and I said go. That's all I had to do. And I ended up with two domain controllers that I don't have to manage now, right? They're doing it for me and so forth. It's a beautiful thing. Now when I come back to my ARM portal, I now have a domain controller available to me on that VNet. So now what I did is I went to the Quick Start template page. If you search on RDS, you'll find the templates, and I ran this template. Build me an RDS deployment with an existing AD. You just click Deploy to Azure. You fill out a few fields. You give it the domain name that you created over an AADDS, the domain administrator account, and a couple other things. They'll pop up here in a second. And you say go, And an hour later, you have basically a full deployment then using that domain services instance. Pretty cool. And so I filled these out, said OK, and create, and off I went. And then what you'll see here in the end, you'll see that I've got three VMs is all. So you'll see that there's no domain controller there, right? I've got my broker VM that's got my license server in it. I've got my gateway that's got my RD web. And in this case, I created it with just one session host because I'm trying to save some money. But I could have picked 3 or 10 or whatever, right? And off I went. So that's the beauty of PaaS services around RDS and Azure. Now, one thing I'll take you back, we talked about is the fact that now I can use AAD to manage my users. And so I've gone in here and I've created some users. I created this domain admin. And one thing that you should be aware of if you're going to try this is that you do have to create a special group called AAD DC Administrators and drop an account in there. And that's kind of like your domain admin. It's not really the domain admin, but it gives him special privileges to be able to join machines into that domain. Right? Those domain AADDS instances, they can't actually give you domain admin powers, right? Because they need to manage those VMs and that and such for you, right? So that what they've done is created this group where you can drop accounts into it and then you can do certain things. Right? And as I said, I created a couple of users that now I can use to log in and access in this case, I published a desktop, but it's as simple as that. Okay, so I'm gonna go back to the presentation now. And we're gonna talk about the next area that we've spent some time working on, improving the reliability of RDS deployments in Azure. So we've talked about HA deployments, but what we haven't talked about is HA file servers, okay? And if anybody's been trying to do this in RDS, and I know there's lots of people that have because I get calls all the time saying, hey, how the heck do I build an HA file server in Azure for my UPDs? Because it's got to be domain joined, right? And the answer was, you can't do it. There was no way to do it before Windows Server 2016. And then along came Storage Spaces Direct. It was a beautiful thing. When I first heard about it, I was like, finally, we've got a solution to the problem. So Storage Spaces Direct is a shared nothing clustering technology, basically. And that was the fundamental problem. All the clustering technologies that we had required shared storage access from the two VMs, and there was no way to do that in Azure. Well, Storage Spaces Direct just removed that constraint. And so now I can build a scale-out file server in Azure VMs, right? I can put them in an availability set, and now I've got a full HA file server for my user profile disks or for other storage as well, right? Now, remember that HA RDS requires a file server, and it requires one that has to be in a domain, the same domain that we're in, right? And that's why this is so important. So we couldn't use things, like a lot of people tried to use Azure files, but it didn't work, because it's not in a domain, right? So we couldn't use domain ACLs domain accounts to set ACLs and things like that, right? So again, back to my visualizations here. In the 2012 R2 world, you had an HA RDS deployment, but your file server was a single VM. And Azure doesn't give you an SLA for a single VM. They only give you an SLA if you have two or more inside an availability set. So they might decide to restart that VM right when you're doing a demo in front of your execs. And I know a company that this happened to them. And believe me, they jumped on scale-out file server, this solution, real fast. And because what happened is then the whole deployment basically goes down. You log in, you get temp profiles, you can't find your data and so forth, right? So now, with Storage Spaces Direct, we can set up a multi-node scale-out file server that's domain-joined and actually works with RDS, Now if one of those VMs gets restarted, no problem, right? We still have access to those user profile disks and we can mount them on the session hosts, right? All right, now of course people are saying, whoa, great, cool technology, but how do I set this thing up, right? So we've done quite a bit of testing. We've been working with the Storage Spaces guys for, at least a year now on this. And we've come up with some guidance. We just published it, but I'm going to walk you through the kind of the synopsis here. First of all, you want to use D-series VMs with premium storage. You know, we tried starting with the basic storage and just didn't get the, we had latency problems, basically. Just didn't have the bandwidth and latency. So we found that premium storage is the way to go. You want to have a minimum of 2 storage accounts, because you don't want your storage account itself to become a single point of failure, right? So you got 2 storage accounts. The storage for the 2 VMs are going to be in the different storage accounts. And then you want to have the same number and size of data disks on each VM. So this is another important point I guess I should make here. If you haven't built VMs in Azure, you have your operating system disk, and then you can mount data disks to that VM. Turns out you can attach 2 per core, which will be important in the next slide. Now, for small and medium deployments, what we recommend is something called a 2-node cluster with a cloud witness. So this was a technology actually that the Storage Spaces guys just announced this week, that they're supporting these 2-node clusters with cloud witness. This is great for our customers because, again, you want to lower the cost. You want the fewest number of VMs as possible, right? And so the 2-node cluster was a real important feature that we were asking them for, and some of our close partners were working with them on it as well. So then you want to set up a mirror volume with 2 copies. And then the way you grow this, right, is you add data disks. And you can either more data disks or bigger data disks, right? And then eventually, as I said, you got 2 data disks per core. So if you start with a 1 core VM in each of your nodes, you're going to get to 2 data disks and you're going to run out of space there. So then you got to go up to the next level of VM. It's got 2 cores. Now you can get to 4 data disks, right? And you run out of space there, you go up to 4 cores. And now you see the point, right? Now for larger deployments, eventually you're going to max that out because you're going to get to 8 cores. And you're only going to be able to put 16 disks on it, and then that's going to be the fixed size you get to with a 2-node. And then you've got to go to multi-node clusters, 3, 4, 5, and they can go all the way up to like, I've forgotten the number of them. It's big. Bigger than me and my customers will probably ever get to. So this is a table that we put together, because it turns out that it's not that trivial to figure out what the optimal cost point is for different sizes of storage, because you can mix and match the VM size and the cores with different disks, numbers of disks and sizes of disks. And it was kind of like, ah. So we put a spreadsheet together, and it turned out it wasn't linear, so we had to like go through the spreadsheet and pick these out. So this, we kind of put this cookbook together for you. And it's in the documentation that we just published. Let me show you how to read this. Let's say you've got 500 users. In this case, I'm going to assign 5 gigabytes per user. Okay, or at least assume they're only going to use 5 gigabytes per user. So I'm going to need 2,500 gigabytes total, right? So in this model, I'm going to use D2 VMs, right? So those are 2 core, each with 3 data disks attached, and those data disks are going to be P30s, they're called. That means they're a terabyte each. And so my final configuration is going to be a 2-node cluster, D2s with 3 of these P30 data disks on each one. So I'm going to set that up in one of these 2-node clusters that I was just talking about, right? With the cloud witness and so forth. Okay? So in our diagram that we had before that shows the architecture of this whole thing, this is what an HA RDS deployment is looking like now. But we didn't have a file server here. So this makes sense for, you know, some of our customers don't need, they have stateless RDSH servers because they have an app or whatever that everything stored in maybe a database or something, and so the user profile doesn't matter. So this works fine for that. But if you have user profiles and you want to maintain them and have them migrate around, then you're going to put in one of these two-node file server clusters in an availability set, right? And now you've got a full HA RDS deployment with a share for your user profile disk that's also HA. Okay? All right, so I mentioned we just published this documentation, I think, literally yesterday. And so I've just got a picture of it here and one of our shortened URLs that you can get to up there, one of our AKA MS RDS on Azure user profile. And you'll find this document, and it'll walk you through not only that guidance, but it actually has the step-by-step, how do you actually deploy one of these things, right? Are we going to build a template? Probably. Seems like it makes sense to me, right? Don't have one today, though, unfortunately. Okay. Another area that we focused on was improving our app compatibility. So we did quite a few things in this area, actually. So first of all, with 2016 is really the first time RDS has actually supported has backwards compatibility to previous version of session host. Because we know that customers have a lot of investment usually in their session host images, right? That's where they've done all their testing and their app compat, and they know things work. Now, on the other hand, we don't want to stop them from upgrading to 2016 and getting all these cool new features for the infrastructure servers, right? The gateway, the broker, all this stuff, we made all these great improvements. So our recommendation right now is get your infrastructure upgraded to 2016 as soon as you can. And then as you find time to, you know, retest your applications on a 2016 RDSH, then you can start migrating your collections over to 2016. And of course, that'll bring the new Win10 GUI if you're running full desktops and so forth, right? Another area that we focused on were graphics improvements, graphics acceleration in particular. So we have our RemoteFX 3D graphics adapter, or VGPU we call it, technology. We made a bunch of enhancements to that. That's available, of course, to everybody on-prem. If you're in a partner-hosted cloud or on-prem and in a private cloud, you've got access to that and all these improvements. But now we've added a new technology called discrete device assignment, working with the Hyper-V team to develop this, that we have a pass-through technology now. So the GPU will actually pass straight through. So the reason this is important and why it's in my app compatibility section is a couple of reasons. Let me draw some bars around this. First of all, the RemoteFX 3D graphics adapter, we never supported OpenGL before this release. And that was a big app compat problem because there's lots of 3D graphics apps out there that need OpenGL. So it was kind of eliminating all those from the possibilities of acceleration. So now you can support those apps. And of course, the discrete device assignment, that actually exposes the underlying hardware driver now in the VM. So there were a lot of apps also that said, oh, I don't know what this 3D graphics adapter thing is. You know, it's not on my list of supported graphics cards, so I'm not going to install, you know, something like that, right? Now, with the DDA, it's going to see an NVIDIA, you know, grid card that it knows about and will be happy. Now, another thing we've done is we made a bunch of optimizations in our session host to allow the session host to share the GPU. Only the discrete device assignment. So now you can install a GPU on your host. You can spin up a session host VM on that, route the GPU through using DDA, and then run multiple graphics apps on top of that. Okay? Another scalability improvement. Now, of course, the Azure guys, they're meanwhile taking advantage of the same technology. So they're building, they're rolling out 2016 in their fabric. They're rolling out graphics cards in their fabric. And they're going to introduce, and they've already have in preview, a new GPU-enabled VM series called the N-Series, right? So this is a beautiful thing for customers who want to host in Azure, graphics accelerated applications. So you got your fabric, now is going to have the NVIDIA M60 GPUs for our graphics acceleration for visualizations. We're going to have 2016 Hyper-V in the fabric, so we're going to be able to support the DDA. We'll have our new N-Series VMs, and now you will be able to spin up a 2016 session host using one of those N-Series VMs, and now your customers, or your users, sorry, can run multiple sessions of AutoCAD and other types of applications now inside that VM. So we get a lot of benefits of efficiency that way, running multiple users off that GPU. Okay? All right. I'm going to jump to a quick video demo here. If you didn't see this earlier, it's pretty darn cool. But this is an example of a test we've run of a 3D graphics application running using that N-Series VM and the DDA technology and all that stuff, right? So we got audio back there?
So the first thing I want to show you is this eDocs viewer app from Dassault. And here I've loaded up a 3D image of a jet engine. So I'm actually going to start this rendering. So I'm going to rotate this engine around, and you can see as it's drawing, it's very smooth. And you can see, you know, very high detail. That
Any suggestions on how I get the video to work here?
I tried.
Enabling the video.
Duplicate. I'm going to duplicate. Let's see if that works. Yay!
There you go.
Okay.
We get with this. But I'm cheating a little bit. So let's really tax this system here and let's turn on some of the effects. So here you can see I've applied high surface visualization here with reflections. And you can see it's still rendering very smooth. And you can even make out some of the background images in the reflections here. And I'm getting a really smooth experience here.
That's pretty incredible. What would this have looked like?
So again, that's a full 3D graphics rendering with all the special effects and everything. In this demo, Scott was running that out of Azure, one of the VMs, down to one of our RD clients, right? So you see the type of fidelity we can get now running even out of the cloud. Okay. Now, one of the last things we did I mentioned earlier is this concept of personal session desktops. This, again, is we think of it as kind of an app compatibility feature because a lot of customers were coming to us and saying, hey, we're in the cloud. We're providing session desktops to our customers, but you know maybe there's a few users in a given customer who want to have admin access to their VM. We can't do that with session host server, right? So that was really what this was all about. Now users will be able to install their own apps, and they can be given admin access and reboot their machines whenever they want, and so forth. So it's true personal VM. It's just that it's based on our session host technology. Okay, so no RDS session would be complete without some kind of scale guidance because people always say, okay, this is all great, cool stuff, but now, like, how do I even know how to build something for a certain size of deployment, okay? So I've kind of condensed this down in sort of cookbook form here. First thing you need to understand is that the session host is going to typically be your main bottleneck, right? And that makes sense, because that's where the applications are actually executing. Your users are logged in there and so forth, right? So that's the key. Now, the next bottleneck is likely to be your gateway, because it's in the path of every single active connection, right? Now, broker is not in the path. A lot of people misunderstand this. Broker is only involved in the path just during the determination of what session host a user should log into. Once they've been assigned a session host, broker's done, right? And so broker only comes into play in very large deployments and typically during log-on or reconnect storms. That's when it becomes a bottleneck. And I didn't go over this because we didn't have time. One of the earlier sessions on all the improvements we've made in 2016, we talk about a lot of improvements we made to handle this scenario, right? So we've made tons of optimizations in our broker to make it handle these log-on storms. Now, RD Web and RD License Server are typically just not going to be involved, right? Because there's very low usage there. They're only involved at the time of log-on. Okay, so with RDSH, you want some way of at least getting in the ballpark, right? So there's a third-party tool called LoginVSA that a lot of people use to test workloads, and it's becoming somewhat of a benchmark, if you will. And they have three basic models, what they call workloads that they can run, a light, medium, and heavy, right? And so what we've done is we've run their workload up in Azure and found that you know we could run so many users per core with a medium workload. Okay? Now, it's really important to understand that these are just to get you in the ballpark, right? You have to test your actual application and the way that the users are using it. And my favorite example is a browser, right? I can have one guy logged into Wikipedia, and he's looking at static, you know, black and white pages, and he's hardly doing anything with the CPU, maybe 1%, right? And then I can have another guy who's using this exact same app, and he's watching a full, you know, full HD video, full screen from off of YouTube, right? Well, he's probably burning up 100% of two CPUs. So there's orders of magnitudes that can be here, and that's why it's really important to actually characterize the apps and the usage that your users are doing, right? So these numbers are just gonna get you in the ballpark, but this is what we've done. So let's go through an example. Let's say you've got 400 users that you wanna figure out how to size, right? Well, in the testing we did, we found that the login VSI medium workload was able to run on about four users per core and about 450 meg of memory per user. Okay? One thing to notice here, I'm gonna take a little aside. A lot of people at the booth don't understand this, but this is why VDI is so much more expensive than a session host environment, right? You'd be running one user per two cores probably in a VDI environment and 4 gigabytes of RAM. So we've done modeling of this and the cost is about 4x. So it's way more efficient to run in a session host environment. And I tell people, start there. And if you can't make it work in session host, then go to VDI, but don't start in VDI because you're just starting in the most expensive scenario, right? Okay, so in this model, we need 100 cores and 180 gigabytes of RAM to support those 400 users in our session host farm, right? So I'm gonna say, okay, well, let's do 25 A3 VMs. A3s are 4 cores, right? So that gives me my 100 cores, and it gives me just about as much memory as I need. Close enough, okay? Now let's go on to our gateway, the other bottleneck. With gateway, we typically use 200 connections per core as our kind of rule of thumb based on the testing we've done. So for 2 cores, I want to have an HA deployment, so I'm going to have 2 A1 VMs. That gives me my 2 cores, right? And then the way this would look all up than for 400 users, as I'd have 25 VM, A3 VMs for my session host. I'd have two A1 VMs for my RD Gateway and web VMs. That gives me HA, right? And then I have two A1 VMs for my RD Connection Broker and License Server VMs. Okay. Now, really important to notice something on here. That's where all your cost is. You have 25 VMs running. You're paying per core in Azure. You have 100 cores as opposed to 4 cores for the rest of that infrastructure. Right? So that's why it's so important that you shut down your session host servers. If you want to keep your costs under control, that's the key. Okay? And that's what the scaling script is all about. Ah, we're at the end here. So I'm going to summarize. Okay, 2016, we've got our HA RDCB now that you can use SQL auth that we demonstrated earlier, right? Now we can tie that into Azure SQL database or a database in a shared SQL server, and we significantly can reduce our cost and complexity of our deployments. AAD domain services, new feature in Azure. Again, reducing cost and complexity, right? And we get the side effect that we get the benefit that we can manage our users now out of AAD, right? Storage Spaces Direct lets us deploy full HA domain join file servers in Azure VMs now for our user profile disks. Hyper-V DDA gives us our new N-series VMs in Azure. And now we can run multiple graphics applications on a session host VM up in Azure. And then finally, personal session desktops allow us to set up personal VMs in Azure for our users and give them admin access. Okay, so I mentioned earlier there were some sessions earlier in the week. I highly recommend if you missed these, go back. There's one tomorrow by MVP of ours, Dr. Benny Tritch. He's going to be presenting tomorrow morning, I think, in C202, same room, it looks like. So he's going to be walking us through a lot of the testing and performance and scalability that they've been doing on the GPU technology. So real interesting. Sorry? Did I get the wrong title? Oh. And then just general resources here that are always available to you to get more information. And last but not least, please fill out your evaluation. Really helps us tune our messaging and our presentation skills and make this more useful for all of you. So thank you very much for your time.